What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore. We're back with our expert corner interviews where we get to talk to short-term rental investors willing to share the good, the bad, the ugly about their journey into short-term rental investing. Today, we've got kind of part two. We talked to Molly Markey a couple weeks ago. Now we get to talk to Ned, her husband, Ned Markey. Appreciate you joining me today. And we're going to keep the conversation going a little bit about your guys' portfolio. So thanks for joining me today.
Hey, thanks, Sean. Happy to be here.
Absolutely. I'm hoping that we don't hear any sirens going off in the background. You told me you got some tornado warnings out there right now. So we're going to hope that we don't hear any of that stuff. not because I don't want to hear it on the podcast. I just don't want you to have to go through it.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. My kids are getting early dismissal for tornadoes today. So
yeah, that's always scary. We don't get tornadoes out West where I'm at. And so I've actually never been in an area where like there was actually a tornado warning. So they look fairly scary when I see them on TV.
Yeah, but they're not as bad as like a flood or a hurricane or something. That's
right. They're a little worse. Yeah. You know something about that. And so you guys had a total loss in a hurricane. So you're rebuilding. So we'll dive into some of that stuff as well. So, but before we do, give everybody a little bit of a background. I know that we talked to Molly recently, but for those new listeners, give it a little bit of background, where you guys are from, what pays the bills, what got you ultimately interested in short-term rental investing. And then we're going to talk about you guys have built a nice little portfolio. So we're going to dive into all that as well, but let's dive into the background first.
Sure. Yeah. Right on. Well, I'm Ned Markey. I'm a pediatric dentist, a pilot, a real estate investor, an author, and we're just having fun at life. I guess Molly and I decided early on in our marriage, we had a little motto that said, fast airplane, small house. Some people thought we were crazy, but really we were just being intentional. But like a lot of you and your listeners, I'm a husband and a father, and I just kind of wanted to build a life that was very intentional with the way we do things. So we now own 7 short-term rentals across 5 markets, and we just fly between them. So
I love it. And it's one of my favorite things about you guys is I like kind of vicariously through you, because I have my pilot's license. I don't have the plane yet. I fly like the little slow 182s, right? You got the nice little turboprop and you're bouncing around and a lot of, I love it where you said it's a life by intention, because even like we were talking to Molly before, it's like even settling into the Wisconsin area, you guys are like, hey, listen, we're going to be centrally located so that we can fly wherever we want to go and pretty easily do that. So that's a lot of fun. Now, you said something that I didn't know when you were telling me your bio. You're an author. What did you author?
Well, I co-authored a book with a guy named Chris Voss. You might know.
I know Chris. I've heard of Chris. Yeah, I think a lot of people have heard of Chris.
Yeah. So I did a project with him and a bunch of other people where we each wrote various chapters of a book, and it was released last summer. It's called Flip the Script. So
love it.
I have another book coming out entirely my own. That one will be released probably pretty soon. The manuscript is written, but I haven't published it yet. But that one's going to be called The Freedom Stack, I think. I think that will be the name of the title. Because it's kind of the way we designed our life is through, I kind of believe there's a framework that you should design your life so you don't get the cart before the horse, and then you can kind of really create a life of optionality instead of drift. So
I love it.
But here's the hard truth.
I'm gonna have to look at the one with Chris there, and then also the new one. So that's awesome. Congrats. That's really fun. I know what kind of a undertaking writing a book is, and so that's pretty awesome. So congrats on that. I'm excited to look and read both of them.
Yeah, this one I'm really excited about, because in my profession, I see a lot of really high income earners who are completely stuck. They've got great income but no freedom. They've optimized their lifestyle, but they've kind of built themselves what I call the padded trap. So everything looks great from the outside. You got a beautiful vacations that looks great in the photos. Got a nice house, drive a nice car, but you're kind of stuck to that W-2 golden handcuff income. Yeah. So kind of our approach was like, how do we design enough cash flow? This is why we get in the short-term rental world in order to pay for our living life expenses. So
love it.
Yeah.
Did you and Molly go into real estate prior to short-term rentals? Was there other asset classes that you were attracted to or dove into before short-term rentals?
Yeah, actually, when I was in dental school, we bought our first duplex. So we were house hacking before anybody called it house hacking. We lived upstairs and some tenants down. We bought a six unit also when we were in dental school. So Molly had three jobs, and I used my student loan money to buy houses. And that's how we got our start. So we did some long-term rental stuff, some Section 8 stuff. It was a disaster, a nightmare. Would not recommend it. Took a little break from it for about 10 years, and then a hotel came for sale, and I ended up buying that with another surgeon friend of mine. And we just sold that actually this year. So we had that for about 10 years. It was infinite returns on that one. And then we just kind of went hardcore into short-term rentals since then.
Love it. And
So.
so when was the first short-term rental? If I remember talking to Molly, it was pre-COVID, right? We were in that the toward
Yep.
the 17, 18 range. Is that what
Yep. Yep, that's right. 2017, we bought our place in Alpine. That's the one you're going to come visit us at, Sean, when you fly in.
I
We're
love
right down
that.
the
I
runway.
have actually flown into that airport. So you know that is something that I've actually done. I love that airport. Like right on the banks of the Palisade Reservoir there. It's beautiful.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. It's changed a lot probably since you were there. I don't know when you were there last, but it's the life of the rich and the famous now. I could not afford to get in there if I didn't get in when I did. So,
So that
yeah.
was the first one out west. And then why don't you give just as, and then we'll, I'm gonna bounce around the portfolio, but why don't you give us a little bit of an overview of the portfolio and the time frame as you were growing it, and then we'll dive into some of them.
Yeah, sure. We started off with Alpine. We flew out there and landed, and my neighbor, he has this beautiful fountain in his front yard, and it was sunset and the alpine glow on the mountains and the fountains bubbling and the music's playing, and it was just like, I'm buying a place here. So we looked at three different houses, ended up buying one of them, and it's definitely my favorite place still. But we totally decorated out. This is pre-Vodacy, so we didn't do the Vodacy stuff yet. But we had so much fun with that we ended up buying a beach house. I ended up 1031 exchanging my six unit Section 8 housing unit for a beach house
A little
in
bit of an
Florida.
upgrade as far as
Yeah.
like quality asset, quality area, right?
Yeah, exactly. So but so your listeners know you can 1031 exchange, you know, your long-term rentals into short-term rentals. It doesn't matter. And that's a beautiful thing. So then we did that beach house. That one's on North Captiva Island. Then we did a second one on North Captiva Island. Those two are really, really awesome properties. The one piece of paradise was got us into your 1% club a couple of years ago. Then I think we picked up what we call Driftwood Dreams, which is out on Lummi Island. And then
In the
one
Pacific Northwest, right?
in the
That so
Pacific
we went
Northwest.
down
Yeah.
from Florida all the way up to the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, exactly. And then back down to Florida again at a place called Punta Gorda. That's the one you're referring to with the hurricane. We actually had to tear that one down because we had 6 feet of flood water in there. So that one's being rebuilt right now. Actually, Molly's coming back from Florida right now. She just did all the design work for it. And then lastly, we picked up two in Snowmass Village, which have been really solid performers in the short time we've had them. So solid
Love it.
market.
Love it. And I just so the always as a reminder for you guys listening, we always post all of these links to their properties in the show notes so you guys can check it out. I told Molly my favorite brand of all time so far is your guys's Cowboys and Mermaids Vacation Rentals. I love it. And it's always been my favorite, like the name and the brand of the portfolio. So kind of covers everything, right? We went out west in the mountains first, and then we went down to the beaches, went up Pacific Northwest. So you guys are in a lot of different markets. One of the hardest things for people to get past is where do they start? Where should they go? You've seen a lot of different types of markets. Do you guys have a preference on like any advice on steering somebody where you've liked the best? Or is it like you mentioned, one of your favorite properties is still the one out in Alpine, Wyoming? Is that based on like, hey, I love this place. I love to come visit it. Or is it based on, hey, I make the most money here. How do you judge it? I know I have my opinions on buying in areas we like to visit and we like to use and we like to stay, but you've doubled down in a couple areas and but you guys are very spread out. So what kind of advice or kind of lessons learned as you built that portfolio have you guys come across?
Yeah, so we just really like picking places that we like to go. So I think I would say to your listeners, go where you want to visit and travel to and make it work. That's the most fun way to do. That's the, you know, you get the most excitement, the most pleasure out of it. If you're just doing it solely for the finances, I think you're going to get burned out on it, to be honest with you. So there's a couple more markets that I'm interested in personally. I don't know if financially they're fantastic, but they'd be fun. You know, doing something in like Charleston would be really fun, and something in like New Mexico or Arizona, kind of that Southwest feel, would be really fun to decorate and do really cool. So those are two more markets that I'm interested in the future. Probably Molly and I will build something in St. John in the U.S. Virgin Islands. Mm-hmm. We have some property there. But we may end up buying there too. So we'll see. But that could be the last, those might be the last properties we do. I don't know. My original goal was 20 properties over 20 years. And
that's a big portfolio of short-term rentals. As like we've talked about this in the past, you and I, that's a very large short-term rental portfolio. Like it's very rare to see 20 property portfolios.
But I think you would net, you know, $2 million a year off of that.
Yeah.
So in $2 million a year, I can do whatever I want to do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so it's, and that's where, you know, it sounds like the books are kind of, you know, very much sharing these types of, this type of advice, but you're building a life of intentionality. Like you're using intentionality to build a life that you, like I always say, you don't want to take a vacation from. Right. And so it's very like, it doesn't happen overnight. It's saying, here's my goal. And one of the things I love just listening to you talk on a regular basis when you and I have conversations is you guys are very, like, very intentional about the decisions you're making, where you're going, what you're doing. And it doesn't happen overnight. But when you look back and you're like, man, since, you know, in the last 9 years, look what you built since buying that first one. And you know, you're close to halfway to your goal, you know, and you buy a couple more and all of a sudden you're like, okay, now I'm building something that I don't have to always, you know, you're the other thing I always like is you're not trying to quit your job, your day job tomorrow, right? You're like, hey, listen, I'm going to use the income from my day job, the, you know, all that active income that I'm making. And I'm saying, you know, what, one of the things you said earlier, I'm going to have fast plane and a small house, but you know, for those of you that aren't pilots and don't know, planes are expensive. So that statement is like, hey, I'm going to use that. But then also it's a vehicle to start really going and enjoying these properties. And I always get a lot of crap for when I speak on stages and I go talk to groups of investors and I say, listen, start with the properties and build a portfolio of properties that you want to use and you want to visit and figure out how to make it work. And it is, to your point, it is so much funner to have a portfolio of properties that we very much enjoy, and they can still be very good financial investments. Even the ones that aren't massively cash flowing, they can still be over a period of time. You know, the Alpine, probably when you bought it, wasn't a highly cash flowing property. I don't know exactly, but I know out West when we buy properties, it almost doesn't matter when we bought them. You bought it at a time though, where that property has gained some massive value over the years, just from being in a good quality area and a good quality market, even if it wasn't massively cash flowing for you from the beginning. But you also have got that intangible thing that's hard to measure on a portfolio is the lifestyle upgrade of being able to go use that property with the family and in yourself and just saying, hey, listen, that's one of my favorite properties. And so I'm highlighting this point more and more and more lately because people are trying to chase these markets just based on returns and just based on all the pro forma numbers that they're seeing on spreadsheets. And I say, just pause. We've been doing this for a long time. The one of the biggest benefits of this type of a portfolio is they're fun to own. And there's a lot of value in that as well, especially when we can stack that on to a long-term financial asset. It's much different than you mentioned you've been in the Section 8 game. That's strictly a cash flow game, right? Because there's nothing fun about owning Section 8 properties. And so there's other asset classes that you just don't have the tangible benefit of using them. And so if you are going to have that benefit, you might as well buy properties that you like to use, right?
You hit the nail on the head, Sean. I think to your listeners, you know, there's four ways, main ways that you make money in real estate. One is appreciation. Certainly my Alpine house, I paid $540 for it. I'd expect to get at least $1.5 million for it right now. And that was only, 2017 to, 9 years ago, to 2026. Yeah. So that's pretty good appreciation. depreciation. We always do cost segregation studies, and that saves me a lot of money off my taxes. So you have the cash flow, which you just mentioned might not be the greatest in the beginning, but as time goes and those rents go up and they kind of raise up with the value of the property, with the appreciation, but the rents keep going up and but your mortgage stays the same. So the cash flow keeps getting better and better every year. And then lastly, the one I think that nobody really pays much attention to is the equity pay down. Like I look across I look across my portfolio of 7 properties and I look at how much equity gets built every year. It's in the hundreds of thousands of dollars every year. And, and the tenants are paying it for me. So like you can't beat it when you add all 4 of those things together. Is it a little extra work? Yeah. Do I have to like deal with, you know, a broken golf cart on North Captiva? Yeah. Do I hate that? Yeah. But you know what? It's for the couple hours a year that I put into it, Molly puts a little more in. But we're having fun, you know? We're building this portfolio and we get to go take adventures and do things we love to do together as a family.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that you just brought up the fact that nobody is talking about the note pay down. And in fact, we weren't as much either. And I always talk about those 4 major levers, you know, with cash flow, appreciation, depreciation, and note pay down. We talk about it a lot. And we, even on our underwriting sheet, I had Jacob, our acquisitions manager, we changed all of that about a month ago to where that is captured on there now, as because when you look at it, even at higher interest rate environments, you're still picking up usually even on the front end of a loan, you're picking up 5% a year that adds to that return. You're picking up about another 5% a year. And that's true equity when somebody that's else is paying that down for you. It is truly like, it's not a speculation entry when you've got an amortized loan, you just figure out the numbers and put it in there. It's not like an appreciation, which is a little bit more like of a guess. We know it's real. We know it's going to happen. We don't know exactly what it is. That note pay down, we do know what it is. And if somebody else is paying that down for us, you know, over a, like you said, it's several hundred thousand dollars a year that you're picking up just on note pay down. That's massive. And it's all those little levers that get pulled to, like you said, and I'm totally agreeing with you, is, you know, individually, we might say, I don't really like that deal. I don't really like that. I can get better here. I can get better there. But combined, It's pretty tough to find an asset class that beats it long term. And you're exactly right. Is there more work? Yeah. Is it easy? No. There's things you need to do to succeed with it as well. And you have to pay attention that those T's are crossed and those I's are dotted. But at the end of the day, it's a pretty fun asset class to own. And couldn't agree more with you there. So I'm curious, as you, because it's hard to use multiple properties in areas. So where did the decision come to kind of double down in a couple of those areas?
Yeah. So, on the North Captiva, in North Captiva, we have 2 properties, and in Snowmass Village, we have 2 properties, and those are actually condos, and they were the first condos we did. But the first one was going so well, we bought a second one. Yeah. You got to watch out for the HOAs and make sure they allow you to self-manage them. But, the HOA we're in does, and it's been great so far. We don't have to deal with all the maintenance and stuff like that exteriorly. So we just maintain the interior, replace the sheets and pots and pans and whatever, you know, once in a while. And that's not going to be a big deal. Really easy numbers to figure out, because you don't have a whole bunch of, you know, oh, geez, I got to paint the exterior now. Yeah, the HOA might hit you a little bit more once in a while, but it's really spread across everybody in there. So it's not really too big of a deal. The Florida properties, we had built a team to manage the first one down there. So we just utilized the same team to manage the second one. Cash flow numbers were really pretty strong down there. It's a really solid market and has been. North Captiva doesn't have any bridges to it. So it's boat access or airplane access only. And it's a pretty special spot. So we figure they're not making any more island properties. So let's just go for it. There's nothing like it in the United States. It's its own thing.
So when you like I always talk to people and like some of the ways that we try to mitigate risk and certain things and say, hey, listen, I like drive to destinations like North Captiva is just the opposite of that. Right. It's very exclusive to, and it's harder to get to. But it sounds like that because of that, because it's such a destination, it still is insulating against any of the fluctuations with the economy because of the scarcity of it. Right. And so that's another thing when you talk about I love that, like, because I always like to look at contrarian type of viewpoints or maybe some like holes in some of the things that we would say generally, because I always say you got to be so careful with general statements in this game. And one of the general statements that we make is generally we're looking at these drive to destinations or 2-3 hours from major metro areas, because we know there's always going to be a flow of people going there. However, that leads to a lot more commoditization. It leads to less scarcity. But also in when you're selling something, one of the biggest levers you have is scarcity. North Captiva happens to be a very scarce type of a market. So if you can get those properties there, like you said, they're not making any more. The island's not getting any bigger. And so it's, you got that scarcity, and it feels very exclusive when you're there, because you either got to boat in or fly in, right?
Yep. Absolutely. I know you guys have talked about it in the past too, about kind of being exclusive and standing out from the rest of the market. And I know there's another Vodacy home on the island too. But I think, you know, they do and we do an excellent job of staying at the top of the market. We don't optimize for occupancy. We try to maximize for, you know, we don't care if our rates are a little higher and we don't get booked all the time. We just want to, you know, maintain our properties nicely. But yeah, they are expensive to maintain down there, and there's a lot of maintenance that goes into those. Because they're in that salt environment, and holy cow, be careful.
I was talking to somebody yesterday. We were looking at a property and we were talking about their maintenance reserve for every year. And I said, you got to double or triple that. Property is on the salt. And I said, you're going to notice this when you go look at properties. You're going to look at properties, you're going to think, man, the deferred maintenance, they haven't done anything to this thing in 5 years, there's all this rust. And I said, that's an annual thing. You got to like stay on top of that, like all the time. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not 5 years. That's 5 months.
Exactly. That's what I told him. I said, you're going to think there's a 5 years deferred maintenance and it's not even a year long. Yep. That's exactly what I was saying. And so I want to back up really quick, because you mentioned something that we talk a lot about in Vodacy. I'm going to have you unpack it, but is when you said our goal is not the highest occupancy. And I'm going to, we always say, and I always teach people, there's an inverse relationship between occupancy and rates, right? And so you hear so many people talking about maximizing your occupancy. Well, that usually when your rates go down, you can maximize occupancy, but there's a sweet spot where you're saying, I want to push my occupancy as low as possible and still maintain a higher revenue, right? And so I want higher prices, lower occupancy, less wear and tear on my property. So that's what you're referring to right there, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And so that's, playing with the pricing and trying to get it right there, but you're not going to necessarily be booked 80% of the year or 95% of the year, whatever that number is that you're shooting for, whoever might be shooting for. We're not shooting for that number.
We're
shooting for good, respectful, high paying guests that want the experience.
We don't want
to just sell it to somebody, a bachelor party that's going to get it really cheap and come over with other guys and trash the place or something, or whatever.
And I wanted to highlight that, because I didn't want somebody listening thinking, well, Ned and Molly, they've got all these properties. He's a doctor. They make all kinds of money. They don't care about making money with this. Well, I need to make money. No, that's not what you were saying. You were saying, hey, listen, no, we're going to still maximize our revenue and figure out that revenue equation by pushing our rates higher. Helps certain guests self-select themselves out of our property. Yep. We keep our occupancy lower, less wear and tear on the property, but still maintaining a revenue number that works for us as far as the investment is concerned.
Yep. You hit the nail on the head. Yep. It's exactly what we try to do. And we use Price Labs, and we use one of your, I don't know what you call them, one of your affiliates through Vodacy, Buddy VK. Yep. And so Ron does a great job for us. And we just text him whenever we need something and say, hey, take a look at this. And those guys are on it. They do a fantastic job. And so, one of the great things about Vodacy is that you get all these different connections. So there's just so many resources that are available to help you with stuff like that. And, one of the things I want to pick your brain about at some point, Sean, maybe today, maybe different day, but is AI, and how are we going to use AI in the SDR world?
Yeah. It's interesting. My thoughts on it are, a little bit, I almost think that we're going to start to see the use of it. There's a lot of use cases for it, especially on the marketing side, especially on being able to kind of optimize things. The struggle with it that I think is going to happen is I think that people are going to get, especially on the marketing side, the graphic side, being able to make these properties look better than they actually are. And I think yeah. that is going to be, like we talk about all the time, we want to put our best foot forward. We need to attract as many customers as possible, but they need to walk into that house and it needs to look as good or better. They need to be surprised, like, man, this is awesome. Where I think that we're going to have an issue with AI in the very near future. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if Airbnb, Vrbo, in fact, I was having this conversation with Mike Whitfield recently saying, I think you're going to start to see them being able to scrape photos and say, we're not allowing AI generated images. We're not allowing AI doctored up in images. And I think that's going to hurt a lot of hosts, because I think it's getting to the point where there's a lot of properties that look really, really good, but some of them maybe not misleading in the sense, like, you're only going, that's a short-term fix, because you and I both know your reviews are going to reflect that. Like, you're going to yep. be able to get away with that for the first few customers. Reviews are going to reflect it. But that's where I think that Airbnb, Vrbo are going to start to put those filters on and disallow us from AI generated, especially images or doctored images, from showing up in our listings, frankly, because that their customer service issues, their complaints are going to skyrocket when guests start going into these properties and they're like, this isn't real. This is not what I saw online. Right. And so I think that the use case for us makes it easier. We can do things, but I think that the reality is there's going to be a lot of people that are going to reach too far or make it look too good. And mm-hmm. all of a sudden the guest is going to show up and say, this isn't what I thought I had. Right. And so,
yeah. Yep.
Where I
yeah, we've actually been on that side of things because Hurricane Ian went through and we took two hits, one at Piece of Paradise, one at Tipsy Turtle. So we had two houses down for the hurricane for a while, but we still had most of our original pictures back up there. But the vegetation didn't look right because it was gone. It was stripped bare, and so we had people come in and they were upset that the yard didn't look like the way it did in the pictures, but the house was the same. I can't make the tree grow back any faster, but it's all back now. That was 5 years ago or whatever it was. And the island looks fantastic right now. So,
yeah, well, and the other thing that I think AI is making a big advantage for us as investors is now is being able to analyze data. That's where I am finding a lot of use for it in this game is on the creative side, very easy to kind of recognize where we can use that. But on the data analytics side, I'm really excited about some of the things that we're seeing and being able to use AI for on the back end. Now, I will say it's so good and it's so like time saving. We can look at so much data, analyze so much data, but you have to actually understand what you're looking at, and you have to have a very good baseline, a fundamental knowledge of what you're trying to do and what you're actually reading, because so on the surface, it can almost lead you down the wrong road at times. And so I think that the use of AI on the data side is going to be a massive advantage for investors. I've been investing for 26 years. The amount of time it takes now to underwrite something and look at certain data points and scrape data points, it's a fraction of what it used to be, which is awesome, right? But it also, if you don't know what you're doing, I could see where somebody is going to walk into a buzzsaw if they don't know how to read all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right, though. I mean, if you could, and somebody can do this real easy, I'm sure. I'm not that tech savvy, but kind of create an AI bot that scrapes, the listings and then puts them through your own performer, and you can say like, oh, these are the top performers of, maybe that exists already. I don't know. I still do the math the old school way.
Yeah.
I use an app called Deal Check. Forever, I used my own spreadsheet that I wrote, and then I found Deal Check, and that did way more things than my spreadsheet did, and I like that. So that's what I use these days. But you could use some sort of data scraper that would go around in a certain market, say Charleston, and tell you like, this is the number one property that you should buy. And obviously you're gonna not just buy it on the math. I wouldn't. I would buy it on the potential and the experience that I can create out of it.
Yeah.
So
that's what it's one of our members built a bot that went and scraped all. It went to the market they were thinking about buying. They bought a property in Tampa area, and they went and scraped all of their competitors' reviews to see what amenities were being mentioned in the reviews, what people were requesting, what people were saying, man, we loved this, and then it compiled all the data and it said like, okay, here's the top amenity that everybody's raved about. And then, and he just listed it down. Here's the things that people said I didn't like, right? And listed it all down. And the report that he got was amazing. They put, when they were going through their design and setup phase, they used mm-hmm. that exclusively almost for making some of the decisions on what they were going to put into the property. And smart. Yeah, it was a brilliant use of AI, I felt like. And that's where yeah. things like makes it so easy to do that. Well, they launched this property 3 months ago. And I mean, it's already the number one property in that market. And it's just crushing it right now. And a lot of it has to do, it's a fairly amenity heavy property based on how they saw this like, and it's not a hodgepodge, right? It's very well put together and it's very congruent with everything, but it's this, you know, this property that they're like, hey, we weren't even going to run down this road with this wellness like part in this area. We were going to focus more on just the water. They're on the water and some mm-hmm. of the things that you would normally see, the kayaks and the, you know, the fire pit out by the water and the dock and all that stuff. Well, they created this wellness retreat because everybody was, you know, everybody, when they were reading the reviews, everybody was highlighting that that's what they wanted. And sure enough, this property is just crushing it. And a yeah, lot of
check all the boxes, right?
Huh? Yeah, exactly. He's like, yeah. Okay, people want this. We're going to provide it. They're yeah. absolutely want this because everybody's talking about this one. And then he has some different kind of Easter eggs along the way. One of them was this massage chair room. They have this room with like all this like Himalayan salt and everything. It's very spa-like, right? And then they have these two massage chairs that you go in there and it's this quiet room separate from the house. And it's like one of their favorite amenities that everybody loves. But how many of us think I'm going to go invest, you know, in $3,000 massage chairs and throw them in a room. And, but they, one of these, like they, that for whatever reason, somehow that showed up in their AI scrape. We would have never saw that or thought of that looking at the data yeah. on AirDNA or something. Right.
Yeah. That's awesome though. I love that stuff. And part of what, I mean, a lot of what this is so fun for me is because you get to be creative like that.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You get to go like, hey, this is kind of a really weird thing to do. And people think I'm nuts for doing what I do on my properties, but I think it's fun. It's right. It's my creative outlet. So yeah. I don't know.
I totally agree with you. And, you know, we're, you know, entrepreneurs at heart as well. And entrepreneurs like things that are different and creative. And this asset class, short-term rentals, allow us to do that. And we know as marketers, if we can have something different that looks a little crazy, that maybe is like not conventional, we actually get rewarded for all that stuff. So for those of us that like that kind of thing, that we're like, we can have this creative outlet, but also the marketplace really likes unique, different, like something that is like, we don't like the same, right? We don't want to be the same as everybody else. And a lot right. of people have a tendency to just say, okay, let me just look at what's working at the top. And they forget about the aspect that if I just copy what everybody else is doing, I just become one of many, right? And so that if you can lean into that creative outlet, which is really fun part of this game for me as well, that you just mentioned, it actually is a competitive advantage because now all of a sudden we're creating kind of our own category. We're creating a property that is unique and that is different. And that is something that consumers will pay more for. We need to give them a reason and make it nice. But once we do, they're saying, hey, here's my wallet and my credit card and let's get me signed up. Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. What we've had a lot of fun with is, you know, all these houses are on stilts in Florida and we've been buying them with like crushed gravel and shells underneath them. And we go ahead and put in like pools and decks and tiki bars and swing bars and sand and hammock pits and, you know, all the fun things that, you know, it's a value add, right? So
100%. And yeah, I love that you guys do that because how many properties are just, they're just up on skilts, nothing's underneath it. You're like, man, that's such wasted space when you look at what you guys have done to yours.
Yeah. And we want to take the heat off the interior of the house and like put it on the outside on the pool and the decking and not on my furniture and not on the things that are going to wear out. Yep. So yeah, the value add is a good move. I think if you can kind of manage the projects, which I find to be fun and creative. Awesome. But I really enjoy that part.
So. That's awesome. And so as we look toward the future, you kind of shared what the vision is, and we're just going to keep moving down that road. You mentioned a couple of your other highlights of a couple other markets that you're interested in and possibly expanding into. What does the timeframe look like on that stuff? What does the future look like for being able to kind of keep expanding onto this portfolio?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think we just added two this year, or yeah, I guess it was last year, 2025. And so we're taking a break this year of adding because we're rebuilding Colorful Cottage. That's the one we had to tear down. I think it was Milton that flooded like 6 feet of water. Like the fridge floated around, the couch was floating around. We ended up just tearing it down. It was ground level. When you watch the news, that was my house on the news. They were like reporting from my front yard.
Really?
Yeah.
That's never a good sign, right? That's not the publicity you want on a property.
No. But it's the cutest street in town. So they're downtown Punta Gorda, and there's the palm trees and the brick, the cobblestone street, and there's my
Yeah.
house right there in the background, and the lady's like in a kayak, So anyway, we leveled that one. It is now framed in, the roof is on. So we're gonna finish up that one this year. After that, I was actually thinking about buying a boat and just leaving it tied to the dock. I don't know exactly how that fits in. It still can be managed with the short term rental, and we just wouldn't let anybody sail it because it would probably be an expensive boat. So I don't know. We might do that, but you can bonus depreciate that in year one, so that would be nice. But don't let the tax tail wag the dog, right? So
That's right.
you got to be a little bit careful of that too. So make sure your listeners hear that. You want to make sure that you're buying a property for the proper reasons and not just because you're getting a tax savings, because that can burn you later on.
Yeah, it can be a massive strategy to reduce those taxes, but you're exactly right. You still have to buy quality assets in quality areas, and not because you get the same tax savings on good properties as you do on bad. And I'd much rather have a tax savings on a good property because I'm going to be holding that for a long time, right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah. So awesome. Awesome. Well, listen, Ned, this has been a really fun conversation. As we wrap up, I always like to put you on the spot a little bit and ask you of a final thoughts on, if you go back to your younger self, maybe even some advice that's in the book that's coming out. Like, what would you tell your younger self or somebody listening some things you wish you knew before, or you're just really glad you doubled down on along the way?
Yeah, well, I think intentionality is the biggest thing. Like, start early and be intentional. Do not buy specifically for appreciation. Appreciation is really nice, but it's not guaranteed. If you can buy cash flow, make sure you buy cash flow. You can only do so many deals that are negative cash flow before you run out of your own income to keep buying more deals. But if you have positive cash flow on every one of them, and like you said, Sean, it might be only a couple $100 in the beginning, but that's okay. It'll get better. But don't bank on the appreciation. Buy cash flow and continue to stack that so that you have the optionality later on. Your income is not your wealth. Your optionality is. So that's the biggest thing. Start early and get going on it because real estate's amazing. It's fun.
I love it. I love the intentionality of it. Define what that looks like. Figure out what you're willing to do, what you're not willing to do. And like you just said, it's don't just buy for appreciation. That's all speculation. But those other three levers are, those are there every single year that you have to be able to pay attention to. And if your goal is, hey, I need cash flowing properties in this area and this is my buy box, be intentional about sticking to that too, right? Don't need to vary and go, well, this looks good, or I heard Ned and Sean talking, so my buy box was over here, but now I heard them talking, so I'm going to go look over here. Like you just it can work wherever you decide to make it work. Just be intentional about it. And then, like you said, I love where you just said real wealth is having options. And I could not agree more. What you're really trying to do is build this so that in your future self has options. And options, the more options you have, the wealthier life really becomes, right? And so, and it's really options with your time. And that's what really we're starting to you realize is that is the real wealth.
Sean, you're hitting on my freedom stack right here. We didn't get into that at all, but it starts with agency. Like, you have to be able to make a decision. Okay. So agency is the base layer. The second layer is financial freedom, which is what we're talking about. And short-term rental is an excellent way to get to financial freedom. The third one is time freedom, because when you get financial freedom, now you have a lot more time to do things. And then the fourth one is health freedom. You got to get your health. If you have all the finances and all the time, but you don't have your health, what good is it? So you got to, and those four are kind of, you got to get those right off the bat. And the rest of them are creativity, geography, impact, doing missions and things like that. And then adventure, which we love to take lots of adventures. So anyway, that's my freedom stack.
You got to promise me when the book releases, first, I get a copy of it. Second, we have you back on the podcast and let's talk about that. Let's like dive into it. Yeah. Our listeners love this kind of stuff. This is exactly right up our alley. And so I love that we highlighted and touched on the freedom stack at the end, but let's do a part two of this conversation as well. And so that'll put you we'll kind of push you to finish that sucker off. I know that like for me, when I wrote my book, I felt like I was on I got the first 90% done really quick. And then my last 10% took me forever. Cause I just kept making revisions. I kept changing this. I kept changing that. And finally my publisher is like, that was helping me go through it. They're like, you gotta like finish it off. Like let's get this thing launched. And so I'm excited to get a copy of it, read it, but also have you back and let's have a conversation diving deep into it.
Yeah. Sean, I really appreciate what you're building. And so if you're listening right now, please leave this guy a 5-star review. He's doing an awesome job and doing great work and really, really helping push the short-term rental world forward with an excellent program at Vodacy.
Awesome, man. I appreciate that.
Yeah. And if anybody wants to check me out, nedmarkey.com, nedmarkey.com. The website's a work in progress, but we're getting there and we'll get the book up there too. So
awesome. Anyway. We will also post that in the show notes, you guys. So we'll have the properties on there, but we'll also post nedmarkey.com. If you forget it or whatever else, always go to the show notes. We'll make sure that that's on there. And I appreciate the kind words, Ned. You helped me at the end of this episode because first of all, thank you for joining us. Those of you listening, thank you for spending your time with us. We know it's valuable. And I always ask you a couple favors at the end of the episode. And I couldn't ask it better than Ned did is if you have more than 30 seconds, like us or review it on whatever platform you're watching or listening on. We don't run ads or sponsorships. So the only way this show grows is if you guys share it, if you like it, or if you review it, those things will help the algorithm get in front of other people just like you. And the final most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today. Start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey, Grace, is there a website?
Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.